We're beginning a new lesson this morning. We're studying things in life today. And we're going to be doing this for a quarter. And I've decided, rather than giving you a bunch of outlines ahead of time and not covering everything, that we would cover these as the time allows us. We may only have three lessons. We may get four. But what I've been trying to do is take things in David's life that we might understand him and his faith in time for David. We mentioned the very first lesson outside of Jesus Christ. More is written about David than any other Bible character. So God does want us to learn from him. And I'm hoping that in these things we can learn some things about him. We've already talked about the courage of David in lesson one. We talked about his character, how living faith is willing to go against the thinking of the world to stand. We talked in the last three lessons about the friends of David. And we looked at that and the very critical nature of not only David's influence on others, but his friend's influence on him. I realize that in this theme I'm picking out this morning that there will be some repetition, there will be some redundancy, some material in the outline that I'll bear with them. And actually some material that we didn't cover the last outline, I'm incorporating this one. We're going to talk about the enemies of that. You know, you can look at your friends and your enemies, and it'll tell a lot about you. I hope that you don't have any. But if you live very long with the Lord, and you have any degree of leadership, you'll have enemies. I wish that wasn't the case. But that happens in time as you try to serve God. This morning, when we talk about the material, I titled the lesson, The Enemies of David When Worlds Collide. And I want to start off by, really, why would a godly person ever have an enemy? I don't want to have an enemy. I don't know how to do it. But the reason why we have enemies is that we have a different way of thinking. And frankly, when we look at the case of David, you have one serving God and the other serving Satan. And there's going to be conflict in those two worlds. There will always be conflict. And so as you begin to look at this, you can understand when we talk about our world, we're not talking about a physical world. You know, we didn't decide which country we wanted to be born into or whose parents we were going to have. We didn't decide that in the physical world. But in the spiritual realm, we're going to find that we can choose a way of thinking. We're going to briefly just introduce the idea of spirituality and worldliness, or carnality. In Romans 12, verse 55, it says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the words of God, that you present your body as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, and you reign in the church. Now, we start there. We begin to look at the idea of being a living sacrifice. Spirituality means emptying yourself. Spirituality means giving. Spirituality means putting others first. Spirituality means looking at God who is unseen. Spirituality is the minority in this world. When you have that as the basis of your thinking, you're going to do things and not do certain things. There's going to be a certain approach that you take. And so as we begin to talk about spirituality, we need to understand that it's not easy to choose to be spiritual. In verse 2 it says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. If you don't have an outline, raise your hand and you'd walk past some that'd be glad to get to you if you don't have an outline. And so again, as we talk about spirituality, are we born spiritual people? Are we born with this mindset? We're not born worldly people, okay? We are born in a state of innocence. But there comes a point in life where we choose. I really think the idea of faith and accountability is found in Romans 7:9, because it's out of the last ones without the law. But with the command of the king, sin is bound and I died. And I believe the idea here, if you analyze this verse, is that there was a time that even though the law was in existence, Paul was alive without the law because he wasn't accountable. And so we come to a point in faith and accountability, and when we come, the first world we enter, every one of us, is worldliness. Every one of us has been in that rank. Now, I can say Romans 3:3, great, but I will send him off toward the glory of God, even though he did it that way. But notice in Ephesians 2, as you read about the description of worldliness or carnality. In Ephesians 2, 1 says, and you he made alive, you were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the sons of disobedience. Let's just stop just for a moment in looking at this verse. I want to ask you a question, Clark. Who is the prince of the power of the air? And everything. And Satan is here basically the prince of this world. He is at the heart of our world. Worldliness is the popular way. It's the overwhelming way. It's the way that people change. It's reasonable. It's fair. It's the way to live. It's the advice you're going to get from the majority of people. Again, describe the world among whom also we all once conducted ourselves. In the lust of the flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and will not let your children of wrath just as the others. We're talking about two kinds of worlds this morning. When you're within worldliness, you do what you feel like it. Is there a reasonableness to worldliness? Does worldliness make sense? If all you're looking at is the mere name, then won't get it. If I want something, I ought to go get it. If I want to live well in this world, I need to have things. It makes sense. Now, it's a deception, but it makes sense. It wouldn't be so foolish that everybody be going after it. It does make sense. Satan is a very powerful action. And we need to understand that he is at the heart of worldliness. Now what we'll find, again, we talk about when the worlds collide, it's in adversity that you will best be able to see which world you live in. Is it possible for somebody to be a Christian and be worldly? Yes. Matter of fact, Colossians 3, 1 Corinthians 3, 1 to 3, talks about how when you're obeying Christ, your heart, and that word is world, is collection. And so there is a process, even when you become a Christian, you turn to God and you're trying to walk by the Spirit, there is the battle to come out of this kind of thing. And at times of conflict, you find out really where you're at today, and you're striving with enemies. We're talking about the world's collide this morning, about how the enemies are within the world, they are the spiritual man. Notice his way of speaking about enemies. Let them not rejoice over me who are wrongful my enemies. Nor let them wink with the eye to take me without a cause. For they do not seek peace. But they devise deceitful matters against the quiet ones in the land. They also opened their mouths wide against me and said, aha, 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 our eyes have seen it. Now we talk about worldliness. What characteristics of worldliness do you see in this verse? They're David's enemies, but why are they David's enemies?
Liars.
Well, that's obvious. Let me tell you something. The world has no rules. Let me say that one more time. In worldliness, there are no rules. It's fascinating to say one of these professors there at this university or others try to describe that it's a part of God. You can read from them to prove that Hitler really just had a lot of people. People wonder if they were killing all those people. You have no morality without a reason. These people were enemies of David. We're going to talk later this lesson. They had some reason to do it. If they ran over David, it's all over the world. If they ran over David, they might get some of the things that David had. It's very interesting in the world. If you go after what you want, there's a value to having enemies. Particularly if they're weak or appear to be weak. You lie. You do anything you want to do. Now, what did David do? By the way, what's the temptation when people lie against us and hurt us? Let me ask you this one. What do you like to do? been like David and somebody hurts you, that damage your reputation, that maybe even takes things from you, who gossips about you, what's the temptation?
What's that? To get even. That's right. Matter of fact, I want to do a little more get even. Okay. You know, I love you.
And so we can see the temptation in worldliness, and my worldliness is very, very successful in its evangelism. You say, well, my worldliness is very effective and it's evangelism. You're trying to be spiritual and somebody hurts you, and then you do what they do to you, do what they did to you because of them. What have you become? And you're thinking, at least in that matter. Now notice the challenge of the spiritual or worldly and the Satan Christian. I'm not a Christian, but I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian. Every time you drive down the road in traffic, you have a Christian lesson on anger and spirituality, and I go down the road and sometimes, you know, I lose it and I'm thinking, that's really good. That's really great there. Here you are, a great Christian example. Notice David's response. This you have seen, O Lord, do not keep silence. O Lord, do not depart from me. Stir up yourself and awake to my vindication. To my cause, my God and my Lord, vindicate me, O Lord, my God, according to your righteousness. Let him not rejoice over me. How do you see spirituality in this response? What's David saying? Let me wipe them out. Let me destroy them. Is that what David is saying? What's he saying? Let me give the wrath of God all the time. And how does he want God to execute his wrath according to the latter part of the verse? How is this going to be done according to what? Right. Let me make another point. I actually may be skipping down covering a lot of stuff in my outline without covering the outline, but I want to go ahead and cover some of these points early here. Who was David's greatest enemy? If you were to make a listing of enemies, it's just right off the battle, but right off the mind, what do you think that the enemy of David is? It's Saul. The Philistines are always there, but you know who the greatest enemies of David were? From the people of God. I'm not going to have any Philistines listed in my house. Because you expect to fight against Philistines. You know where you're coming from. But the greatest enemies of David came with them. Does that hurt a little more? Expect Philistines to try to kill you. How about your own brethren? That hurts a lot more, doesn't it? Because you love them. And I'm not saying give up on brethren. I'm saying we are people. They just like, if I get mad, if I got mad at traffic, sometimes I might get mad at my brother. And say that to myself. That lasts. Most of the time it's in pride that somebody's cracked me out. You know, we're tempted to come to the Lord. And we can hurt each other. But we do not, we need to be careful in terms of our mindset. Are we thinking about God's causes and purposes rather than ourselves? You're going to respond when you have enemies according to the world that you chose. Can you say, Lord, I give it to you. Lord, I want your righteousness to be done. Or do you try to act like the world around you? I'm going to get it, buddy. I'm going to get it. You've heard me, and I'll teach you that you're not doing it. When we talk about worldliness one more time, there's a couple of ideas here that it's sort of repetitious, but I want to look at it first because we see an idea of conscience. Romans 8, verse 5 says, so those that live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh. That those that live according to the spirit, the things of the spirit. So let's again, one more time, describe the two worlds. How are they describing this verse? What's the two words used to describe it? Flesh and spirit. okay? Why the Spirit represent you? You walk by the Spirit. What kind of Spirit are you talking about? Holy Spirit. God's going to give a message. Okay, and then flesh. That's flesh. We've already described this in Ephesians 3, basically. We'll be considered the flesh of what? Just what you want to do. Now, how many of you really, if you chose the world, you had to read worldly books, you know, how to be worldly? And every day you had to, you know, just think about this, okay, how can I be worldly? I'm going to reduce my mind in worldliness. How many of you chose worldliness that way? We don't have to do that to be worldly, do we? In order to be worldly, guess what we all have to do? Is follow on. Yeah, if you're going to be spiritual, how are you going to be spiritual? God sent the divine hypodermic on that. Who's your spiritual, right? You put the Bible under your pillow and you sleep on it, and you're spiritual. Spirituality is hard because you've got to choose it every day. Okay, let's take a spiritual person and a worldly person. Keep reading. For to be carnally minded is dead, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor it can be, so those who are in the flesh cannot please God. What do you learn about flesh and spirit in verses 6 through 8? If you walk by the flesh, what are you doing? To ultimately are you fighting? And one of the greatest deceptions to us, I'm talking about the people in this room, is worldliness. We can have a respectable worldliness within the church. And we can attend every service, and we can quote the Bible, and we can be an enemy against God. Now what I'm talking about here is not that you don't, you've got to wish, and sin does lead to the saddest important thing. Well, I'm not trying to put you on the guilt trip, but I'm saying there's a basis in which you make decisions day in and day out. There's a basis in which your heart is really set. What you really want more than anything, that's the goal. This morning, I'm going to be presenting a lesson from the Secret Way in a sermon called Time Close Living. And it's God's analysis of the leadership of the vision. It's absolutely one of the most stunning chapters I've ever read in my life about what the leadership of God's people had become. They were totally worldly, and they were in a leadership position that we'll get there in a moment. The flesh and the spirit are in conflict. One looks at the things that are outward and are self-centered. The other looks to God. The strength of worldliness, if you want to break it down, do not love the world, the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the blood of the flesh, the blood of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but of the world. And the world is passing away, the lust of it, that he who knows the will of God abides forever. The three elements of worldliness: lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life. Hey, let's think right back. God is merciful to us. There's two worlds. Let's look at it if you're planning your retirement and you're trying to make investments to plan for retirement. You look at short-term and long-term. Who appears to have the advantage? Worldliness or spirituality? Short-term. Today, next week, next month, next year. Worldliness appears to have advantages. No sacrifice. Now, I'll say this, that in itself is a deception. You'll find it in the soul of the flesh, you'll read the reincorruption. There are people who live worldly lives, you know, sacrifice makes you think you're going to get away with it. It changes you. It destroys your mind. It destroys your ability to see right wrong. So even in the short term, it's really not a bargain. But it appears to be. But then let's look at the long term. Let's look at our ultimate retirement. You invest in the world what you get for it. What is the fullness came back to the world. Now, it's hard for us to see it perfectly. I never forget years ago when the stock market crashed. Everybody had to get the stock market. I had a stockbroker go door to door and knock on my door. He was from a firm that several people work for that I know. I was joking with him like that. Yeah, I worked for this firm, and I've got investments. He says, well, I'll get you. We've got research. We can tell you good investments. Say, pick me one stock. Pick me one stock that is really the top stock you can pick. He said, World Cup. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the stock market, but that 3 years later, he turned Billy up. He went bankrupt. And he was, I kind of laughed at that. But how would you do if somebody came up to you and said, now, I want to put your money in this. And your money and the short term is going to have, you're going to have all of this money, but I want to tell you, you've got to keep your money in this, and in the end it's going to go bankrupt. How many of you would want to make that investment? We wouldn't do it. That's the investment we need to find or control, not just doing what we feel, not just doing what we see. What will really last? I love verse 31 of 1 Corinthians. Let me look at this. This is one of my favorite verses. When you live in that world, 1 Corinthians 7:29 says, that this I say, brethren, is kind of short. So that from now on, even those who have wives, may as though they had none. Those who weep as though they did not weep. Those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. Those who buy as though they did not possess. And those who think this world is not misusing it. For the form of this world is passing away. We get older. The things we buy to take. The desire deep within our body change. The world. And so having seen that, we got to fight this. I'm going to move ahead and get that line. You know, both worlds provide and fulfill them. One is temporary, one is eternal. And you see, the world doesn't give you ultimate peace. Knowing who you are. Jesus says, peace I live with you, my peace I give you, not as the world gives you, I give you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. Later in 1:6:22, it says, therefore you will now have sorrow. But I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and your joy will no one take from you. And in that day you will ask me nothing, until surely I say to you, whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give you. Here we see a joy that comes from serving God, and there's short-term sorrow, long-term joy. Both worlds have advantages. One, we don't have to choose to come, but the other comes by choosing to unseen. One more example, that's Moses. Moses was pitted against his own, the one that raised him, the could have been Pharaoh's household. But the reason why he chose to become an enemy of Pharaoh, according to verse 29 of Hebrews 11, is that she could run into suffer affliction with the people of God and endure the passing pleasures of sin. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater than the riches that the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured to see him who was invisible. I know our study's on David this morning, okay? But I'm trying to set this up. Why did David have that? David was talking about. One more question, and then we'll get into that this morning. Will God bless us? Will God allow enemies to come into our life? Yes, why? I can ask this question, God allow us to suffer? Yeah. Why? We don't always have the answer to all the reasons, but I suggest that one of the reasons why we have enemies is that we can respond to growth. Having ease in this world is not always the thing that we need. And our God will take care of us in whatever circumstance that we find ourselves. Okay, a couple of discussions and we'll jump into the material. What is it possible world can live in? And how do we come to live in the world we choose?
See, Pops, the world's a barn.
Spirituality, the world comes upon after. I have a kingdom.
Yeah.
This is what Moses ran to do it in my research. Have you seen the Spirit?
Follow the Spirit. Trust God. When you trust God, you know He knows. He tells us, hey, we will choose to have those thoughts become thoughts.
Question two. How does the worldly man make decisions? The other day, he got up this morning. He has decisions to make.
Got to go to bed.
What are the decisions that you make? Maybe you have someone make a decision for you and say, you're coming. Okay. Maybe you just got out of work, your mom is failing. But why did you decide to make it?
Know this, that sometimes within a church you can have an element of worldliness, and sometimes churches can be taken over by worldly leaders.
What advantage comes to those that live in the flesh?
Let's just argue. We're going to put an ad campaign.
Okay, you live in the flesh of the way, though. Say you look at the TV, what do they say? You live in the flesh.
pleasure. You have temporary pleasure. You may have money, you may have associates, you have more people with you.
They all it ends up with nothing in the long run. And the last way,
what are the challenges to live in spiritual worlds?
If you just look at the challenges, you know, you see the old recruiting poster, you know,
here, they're on the San Juan community, you see the Marine, they're looking for a good man, you know, but basically, you're going to be spiritual, you're going to be spiritual. And if you look at the challenges of being spiritual, listen, class, what are the challenges?
Your relationships. You're going to be alone in many ways. You're not going to have a bunch of people saying, yeah, I want to tell you something. Gosh, you're blessed here.
You got some people here. You got some spiritual people here that will encourage you. You may not always have that. Go up to Virginia. Go up to other places of the world. You know, but man, there's challenges here. You can do it. But you may not have many people helping you, okay?
Sacrificing yourself. Boy, that's hard. Excuse me.
What else? You cannot do this. You've got to find the mind of the devil. You can so easily lose your mind. I'm not talking about the grace, but I'm talking about letting the world do this.
Now, we're going to briefly cover this section because we've covered this already and then we'll finish our class this morning. But
the greatest enemy that David had was King Saul. And David was never a prophet for Saul. We'll talk about that. I want to give you a little background of how Saul became worldly. Now, I believe with all my heart that Saul was the great king. He was a spiritual man. He was a humble. You know, when you were, when they were before Saul came, did you know how the people would delay for him being before the king? Do you know why? He went in. He was a good man, a humble man, a servant. But something happened to him. When you become a king, now I think of this, and we'll talk about this later. But I like it being a king in these days, kind of like this. This illustration of a football coach in the SEC. Let's suppose one of you guys became the football coach at the University of Alabama or the University of Florida. No pressure, right? Everybody loves you. Oh, you're the coach. Well, let me put, what's expected of the team? What's expected of the coach? We love you as long as you are. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Saul been asked for him. God chose him.
And you begin to see that God tested Saul.
The Philistines were coming to find a very different. There wasn't some little sleep by a group here. They brought 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horses, and people at the same sort of seashore and multitude.
Let me tell you something. Saul wanted to go find. Let's go find.
Now, I think you guys can agree that as much guys can see, we like to begin batch. There's a problem. Let's begin the batch. Let's go do it right now. One of the hardest things to make is to see the problem. Go take care of it. Well, God makes him wait.
And what started happening is the people go, okay, so let's go. Come on.
He's not going anywhere. I'm going to get out of here. This is going to be a disaster.
And so he's got a star army to get with, and everybody's getting out of Dodge. They're going to hide. We're going to lose. We don't have a coach.
And so they're crossing the Jordan. And the people that are following Saul are
let's go.
Heavenly Father, you look like the last part of that. Okay, we'll go on. You know what you're doing? We sure we're doing right, yeah. You know, I think we're going to get a go-to-go. Go. Let's fire him. I mean, they had no confidence in Saul. Saul wants to know what's going to happen. Then he had to wait. Then he waited 7 days to work for the time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal. The people were scattered from him. Question.
Who can offer sacrifice before God
under the Old Testament? Can anyone offer sacrifice? Only certain ones can offer sacrifice. I mean, you just believe in the sacrifice and go, my, we're worshiping God. We're recognizing God and knowing what's all in. So Saul said, bring a burnt offering, your peace offerings here to me, and offer a burnt offering. Now it happened as soon as he did, he did the burnt offering that Samuel came and Saul went out immediately to my grave. Samuel said, why are you doing? Saul said, my son of the people were scattered from me, that you did not come this day before him, that the Philistines gathered together with a big man. Then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I am now compelled to offer a burnt offering.
Was Saul right in this?
I know I'm wrong, but I don't tell this person why. And there can be consequences. And it's just one lie, and I love God.
You know, I know I shouldn't represent this thing as this way, but it's just going to be one time, because if I don't do this, there's going to be all kinds of... I could lose my job, and Lord would want me to lose my job.
You see the battle here, the struggle? Choosing spirits and outfit is not easy. Now, let me answer this question. Did Saul think he could?
What happened to Saul is that he began to... It was like from this point on, he began to make decisions on the basis of what works.
What works? What can I get away with? Notice when he was told to destroy others at the Amplifier. He spared the best of the sheep and the oxen. And spared Agag. If he ever obeyed God, he destroyed. He destroyed 99% of the people. He ended up offering the oxen as a sacrifice if he obeyed God.
Spiritual worldliness is talking about the fried ice cream. You know, fried ice cream. You really can't have fried ice cream. Then they can't be the same thing. He wanted to be spiritual. He had successes in the world. He was a winning coach.
But for God, he was a failure. He kept thinking about himself. He kept making excuses for what he did. He tried to blame others. But ultimately, he was rejected by God. He was more concerned with why he did what he did rather than what he did.
Now, by the time David comes on the scene,
is Saul spiritual or what? David spiritual or worldly spirit? We're now going to see world life. Next week we'll talk briefly about Saul. And we'll talk about others because of Saul that became enemies of David.
Thank you for your attention.